You know, speaking of your last mission, you mentioned January 14th, 1945, one of the biggest days the air group had. 57 and a half kills. How many did you get that day?
Darn you.
Just trying to help.
I don't know whether I want to tell this story or not.
Oh, well, you told the other one. You might as well tell this one.
Well, this is the story of the last combat mission of Bud Anderson and Chuck Yeager. And first thing I have to tell you is that neither one of us had to be there. You know, I didn't have to be there because it was a second tour, and that's strictly voluntary. Matter of fact, when I went home on this R&R, and I got back into the personnel system, the pipeline, and I got to the depot where the war guys are coming back and the guys are going over. And they said, you have to go see a shrink. What's this for, you know? So I go see the shrink, and he says, we want you to know that you do not have to go back to combat. We have thousands of pilots that have not flown combat, and we want to be sure you know that. And I said, yes, I know it. I want to go. And they said, okay. So I go back. And I get back there, and then Chuck Yeager was shot down very early in March of 44. And he got with the Free French and escaped, and then eventually walked over into Spain and was supposed to be interned there for the period of the war. And somehow or other, they got him pulled out, and he came back to England. I think we gave him some gasoline for him. I mean the U.S. government.
Right.
And so he's back, and now he is not supposed to fly combat in this theater because, it would put pressure on Spain. He should be interred, or they could say, Chuck Yeager, you're not Chuck Yeager. He's in Spain, and you're a phony. We're gonna, shoot you or something. Or they could torture him and find out how the Free French helped. And it says a little bit about he wanted to finish his tour, so he did not have to be there. Matter of fact, he had to go up and see up the chain of command, and he had a meeting with General Eisenhower, and it was a little later in the war. It was after the invasion. Now we got troops on the ground over there, and it was a little bit safer condition, and I think. General Eisenhower said, well, son, if you want to do it, it's your ass. Go ahead. Something like that. So neither one of us has to be there. I want to make a big point of that. So it comes around to December, late November. And since I'm telling this story, Chuck Yeager comes to me. And he says, hey, let's go on our last combat mission together. Then we'll go home together and continue our friendship. And I said, okay, so I'm the guy that does all the scheduling, so I can make that happen. And so I come along a little more, and he says, you know, sure would be hell if we got shot down on our last mission. That would ruin my whole day. And that did happen. You know, you either... You went about 10 missions, and then your chances of completing a tour were much better. So you either went down early, but there was a few guys went down on their last mission. One of the biggest aces is Gabreski. It was his last mission. He went down. So he says, let's, when you send out 16 airplanes, a squadron formation, you send two spares behind, and those spares have got to fit into any place that, you know, aborts, and then you'd fit in and then go on the mission. It was not supposed to be a mission counter. And you were supposed to turn around and come back, not fly over enemy territory. So he says, let's go out as the spares. And if nobody aborts, he said, let's go on a sightseeing tour down in the Switzerland area in southern France. And we'd been down there, you know, on missions, and we look at that beautiful country. And, yeah, that'd be a good idea. I think that would be good, too. I'll vote for that. Now, I'm a very mature major, 22 years old, and so the day comes, mid-January, 45, and we go out, nobody aborts, and we head off for the, we took a 45-degree and headed off for Switzerland and southern France. And in those days, we had the old four-button channel radios and the VHF, and they were good for about 100 miles. So we can't hear what's going on, and they can't hear what's going on. We can talk, and they can't hear us. So we're getting down there, and Chuck hollers out. He says, hey, there's a Mont Blanc down there. Let's go down there and drop our tanks and strafe them, see if we can set them on fire. Whoa, you know, I said, God, we've been done enough here to get court-martialed already. But I'm very responsible field grade officer, so I said, hey, that's a good idea. Let's go. You go first. And so we dropped our tanks, and he says we set them on fire, but I don't think so. And there was nobody down there. It was the middle of winter, and just nothing but ice and snow up there in a little glass enclosure. And so then we go down, and we buzzed all over. We got through looking around at the Alps and everything. We went down on the deck and flew on the deck all the way home. And we're just having a great time. And we are the last two airplanes to get back from this mission. And I can remember coming in, we beat up the field, which was common, and pitched out, come in and landed. And I'm turning off, Chuck comes in behind me, and I had a really warm feeling. God, it was good, you know, I'm all done, I'm going home. We're taxiing down, and I look down there to my hard stand, and all these people are in the hard stand. And I thought, wow, how the hell did they find out about this already, you know? And, oh, no, my last mission. They're there to pat me on the back and, you know, congratulate us and all this stuff. So I pull in there, cut the mixture, swing it around, and Otto Heino jumps up on my wing, and he says, Andy, he says, the group shot down 57 airplanes today. How many did you and Chuck get? I got off the floor and kind of winked at him, and that's the story how Chuck Yeager and Bud Anderson missed the biggest air battle of World War II.
Hey, Dan Bolin. Great. Dan?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
We've got just a couple of minutes for a couple of questions from the stands. Dan Bolin, if you would. Dan's got a microphone, and if anybody's got a question, raise your hand, please. He'll come to you.
Okay, question? Yeah. Stand, please.
First of all, Colonel Anderson, I want to thank you for your service to our nation. God bless you. Having flown both the B and the D version, which one did you prefer and why?
You flew both the B and
okay.
The D version.
Oh, yeah. Which airplane do I like best? Well, I like them both. The B bottles classically came with a birdcage canopy. But when we put these canopies on like this, they are just about as good as the bubble canopy, and maybe even a little better, because you can actually stick your head out and count the engine stacks. Not that that's important, but it shows you how much you can see around in it. I think they had a different dash number engine. I'm not sure you could measure the performance difference, but some guys said they wanted Bs because they had a different such dash engine. When I came back, mine was, well, it had already been transferred to another pilot, but he'd finished his tour, and it was considered a war weary. It was up at what we called Clobber College, kind of a training thing, and so it wasn't available, but I didn't, there was no choice. I took a D because I wanted the six guns rather than the four guns. I don't know whether that gives you the answer, but I like them both. I shot more planes down with a B, but I like the firepower on the D.
Likewise, as the other gentleman said, thank you for everything you've done for us. But I got a question that I watched Military Channel and watched you many times, and you talk about FLAC. Why didn't we ever go down and try to get them guns when you were escorting a bombers and the FLAC was coming up? Could we go down and got any of them, or did we? Or
no, not on the deep penetration missions or the strategic bombing, because the enemy fighters was a bigger threat. I've heard the bomber pilots talk, and they said when ME-109s came through, they knew somebody was going down. And well, the FLAC was bad too, but I don't know. Our job was to stay up there and go after the fighters for dual reasons. Yeah.
We have Dan. Have you already worked out your program man in the street? Is that a done deal?
What? I've already picked my
You're
three
all set,
people. Thank you
you're
very
all
much.
Set? Yes. Dan. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Colonel Bud Anderson.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.